find out if that common health claim is fact or fiction. I'm Dr. Mark Ferris, a health psychologist and exercise physiologist, and we pit the mythical claims against the scientific evidence in Health Hullabaloo on Texas A&M Health Talk. Welcome to Health Hullabaloo. I'm Mark Ferris here with Tim Schnettler. Good afternoon, Tim.
Good afternoon, Dr. Ferris.
So, I asked you before, do you have a New Year's resolution? Has that changed?
It hasn't changed in the last 5 minutes. I told you, I'm not big on making them. I mean, when I do, it's usually the same ones over and over, and I never accomplish them. But I'll be honest, I don't usually accomplish them.
When was the last time you tried one?
Oh, I tried one
remember?
This past year.
Oh, last year, okay.
Past year, and I got through maybe the first month or two, and then I kind of started to tail off, and you know, you get busy. It's always one of those, I'm going to eat healthier, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and then you get caught up in the day-to-day, and you end up breaking it somehow.
It's interesting. Do you think these resolutions are different than like just people wanting to change throughout the year? Is something special, it seems like, about a New Year's resolution that gives everybody at least one opportunity a year to take on a bigger resolution? And I think
right.
That's the myth we're going to try to expose today, potentially, as we try to provide some clarity in all the confusion as we do on Health Hullabaloo podcast. And so the idea that these resolutions, New Year's resolutions, have to be big,
right,
grandiose. I was thinking on the drive over here, do you know anyone who sets small resolutions? Like, I'm going to eat one apple on January 2nd. That's my resolution. I'm going to ride the bike for 30 minutes on the 2nd and the 3rd, and then I feel good about it. I met my New Year's resolution. I completed it. I was successful. We can't think of one that most people normally set these big ones.
Yeah, it's usually I'm going to do the bike 30 minutes a day, every day.
Forever.
You know, yeah. I'm going to go through the whole year, 365 days. But then it's always, well, I can't start on this day because it's a Wednesday.
I know.
So I'm going to start on Monday. But yeah, as far as smaller goals, don't see that very often.
Many years ago, I had this idea I was going to learn Latin. And so for New Year's, I like bought, as long ago, I had audio tapes. That's how long ago it was. And so I bought audio tapes, and I was going to learn Latin, but I never made it past that. I might have popped the first tape in, and I had a book to go along with it, and then it was like too hard or something. And it just is weird. Like, I made those first kind of steps of commitment,
right,
that were doable, but then this larger vision of learning a whole entire language was just too big. It could be problematic. You know, if you look at resolutions, the idea behind a New Year's resolution is by definition, is a firm decision to do something. It doesn't necessarily say it should be big or small. Now, it might also be a resolution not to do something. I'm going to quit doing A, B, and C as opposed to start doing. Mm-hmm. I looked at some history of the New Year's resolution, and there is evidence that of New Year's resolution, so to speak, 4,000 years ago with the Babylonians, and then into Romans, and then the early Christians. But those were all around religious
right.
resolutions. I'm going to repent. I'm going to fix something this coming year. The errors, so to speak, that I've made in the past year, I'm going to do better in the future. And so these resolutions have been around for a long time. So then I started digging into the research on what kind of resolutions do people pick, and are they big? And what we find is that most people do pick very large, grandiose New Year's resolutions. This one study I'm looking at here was from 1972. And the way it talked about big resolutions was general resolutions. And one thing that it noted in the results was that overly general resolutions are more difficult to assess compared to those which are specified discrete, like small targets of change. So the example is that it's easier to report success in keeping a general resolution, such as becoming an all-around better person, because of the lack of that specified criteria. Mm-hmm. Did you meet your resolution? Oh, yeah, I'm a better person then. But as soon as you start getting more specific or smaller, it becomes, one, it's harder, in like they say, in the research to assess it, but even in life, how do we classify that we were successful in these small changes. What's interesting, as I worked down, it said almost two-thirds of the people in this study who had broken their resolution reported that the cause was themselves. Like, it was a deliberate choice. I just quit, as we talked at the beginning.
Right.
There was perhaps a lack of willpower, or I kept forgetting, life got in the way. Only 36% of the failures were attributed to environmental forces. I guess other people, maybe, or the barometric pressure. We'll do whatever we have to. You know, it wasn't my fault. That's the eternal optimist. So the statement here has really struck me, and I'll see what you think about this. It said that the decrease obtained in self-concept ratings of these participants, in other words, they measured self-concept, or this view of self, positive, negative, sort of like self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
It's just your general, let's say, view of self. So they saw that there was a decrease in the view of self in those people who broke their resolutions, and it might reflect the process of attributing failure to self. So in other words, I set a resolution and I don't get it. Thus, I changed my view of self because I didn't get it. And self-esteem can be impacted. I'm a bad person. We can start labeling.
I'm a failure.
Yeah. This labeling of self. And in the behavioral medicine research, even with self-monitoring, from physical activity trackers to weight tracking, to any of these things that are commonly done with New Year's resolutions, they call them, they're not benign. In other words, we even see it with diabetes self-monitoring, and we might have talked about this before, where, you know, I prick my finger to check my blood sugar, but every time I do that, it reminds me of my diabetes.
Right.
It reminds me of how I'm not eating as well as I should be, but I'm trying. And in other words, they're not benign, they're not valueless types of information. And so I started thinking about this, that there's a couple terms that popped up to me from the psychological literature. One is called self-liberation. It's used a lot with smoking cessation and changing those behaviors, which are also common New Year's resolutions. But self-liberation is this idea that I believe I can change, one, and number mm-hmm. two, I'm committed to changing. New Year's resolutions are always seemingly used as an example, a prime example of self-liberation. We might akin it to willpower, this belief that I can and now I'm going to commit to change. What the research finds is that the more choices people have to meet a goal, the more commitment they'll have. So for example, if a goal is to quit smoking for the New Year's resolution, let's say my only choice is cold turkey. That's it. My commitment's going to be lower, theoretically, compared to if I had three options or two options. Let's say the three were cold turkey, or I could do a nicotine fading, like slowly go mm-hmm. down with it, or the third option is just do nicotine replacements, going from cigarettes to nicotine patches, et cetera. Now I have three options or choices. Yeah. It increases the potential for commitment. And so we hear self-liberation and New Year's resolutions be an example, but the problem is, the good thing about commitment is that we want to stay consistent with those commitments. And there's a great book by Robert Cialdini called Influence. If you haven't read it, it's well worth it. He has a whole chapter on there, commitment and consistency, and how crazy we are as humans to stay consistent, even with the smallest commitments. It's why we get people to sign contracts.
Mm-hmm.
It's the foot and door technique. Salesmen use it all the time, yeah. Advertising, business. It's used all the time. If I can get you to commit just to this little thing and then swoop back around a little bit later and say, well, you already committed to this, right? And making it public is even stronger.
Yeah.
So we make these big resolutions, and maybe we make those public, maybe we don't. So that was the first thing that came to mind, was this idea of self-liberation, that we have to go big or go home. I got to commit to something, and I got to think of something that's big enough for me to believe in myself. Because back to these small, why people probably don't choose small resolutions is the meaning's not there, don't mm-hmm. you think?
Yeah. And to me, like if I set one and I set a bigger one, I feel more accomplished.
Yes.
When I hit that, if I hit that, yeah, you know, not always going to hit it, but yeah. Rather than, well, there was one little step and I accomplished that. And I think that's just a part of the self-satisfaction thing. You know, you want that big, big self-satisfaction.
Yes, that's right. And so these successes or failures, as we just read, we can then interpret those and they influence the way we view ourselves. So in the weight loss research we did years ago, what we were finding was that, and we'll kind of loop back around to this idea as we wrap up, but what we found was I would ask these patients, like, how valuable or meaningful is your weight loss goal, like getting to that goal? Now, these people wanted to lose weight. They were committed to that, right? So I would ask them, well, how meaningful would that be? And they're like, 10 out of 10, right? Zero, no value or meaning, 10. So the outcome was meaningful. So then I started asking, okay, well, how valuable on that 1 to 10 scale is being more physically active or eating healthy? Well, they're like, well, those are valuable, pretty valuable too, right? Because I have to do those to reach this right. outcome that's really valuable to me. So then I started asking, okay, well, how meaningful or valuable is skipping fast food when you want it? Or passing on the dessert when you really, really want it because it's not in line with that goal? Or going to exercise, walk, or go to the gym when you'd rather stay home in the warmth of your house
right.
after a long day at work? You know, how much do you value those times and how meaningful? And the value and the mean just dropped. So in other words, they were valuing the outcomes, which is fine, but all the things they needed to do to get there weren't as valuable. And so we have value in the big. We have value in the grandiose, the plans, the New Year's resolutions. And so that's what self-liberation is telling us. That's what, as we'll see in a second, the way we set goals generally. And some advice that we can give to the listeners as far as their New Year's resolutions about setting big or small ones, mm-hmm. I think that becomes very pertinent. But before we get there was a second thing that came to my mind when I read this. I made a note off to the side when it said that the decrease obtained in self-concept ratings of those people who broke their resolutions, so I'm a failure, right? I put a note, is it possible that making big resolutions help protect our view of self? Right? If I can set a big resolution and I'm probably not going to do it, then could I set it so big where I could start attributing the failure to other things? Mm-hmm. If it's so small that anybody could do it and then I don't do it,
right?
Oh my gosh, how does that? But if I set it so big that there's probably low probability that anybody would do it and then I don't, plus there's so many people that fail at New Year's resolutions anyway, so I'm like, I'm just a part of the crowd. Well, there's actually another psychological phenomenon, a theory that relates to this, and it's called self-handicapping. Have you ever heard of this?
No, I haven't.
It's this idea that we want to internalize success and externalize failure. So, for example, I want to maximize the impact of a success has on my view of self. So if I'm successful, I just want to soak it in and mm-hmm. get the positive vibe and view of myself from that, okay? Now, if it's a failure, I want to minimize the impact of that failure on my view of self. So we internalize success and externalize failures. So only 36% of these people in this study attributed their failure to external.
Right.
So if they would have known self-handicapping, they could have set up the proper scenario. So I know your daughter plays softball. Do you play tennis or?
No.
Ping pong or pool? Are you good at any of those?
Not really.
Not really?
Not
okay.
Really. We always question where she gets her athletic genes
from. Do you really?
It's not from me.
That's funny. So I guess it is your wife then. So let's pretend that you are good at tennis as an example. Okay. I'm not good at tennis.
Okay.
I would like to be, but I'm not. So let's say you and I are going to play, and I do not want to lose to you, Tim. So I have two tennis rackets. One of them is junk. It's like the lowest, cheapest. It's 40 pounds, right? There's missing
Old wooden racket.
It's wooden. It's old. Some heaviest wood known to man. there's broken strings, the paint's coming off, the wrap around, it smells for some reason. Like, it's just everything is wrong. It's not even shaped correctly anymore. And then I have a second racket. It's brand new, made by NASA, right? Diamond flakes. It's beautiful. It feels light, but it makes you move. Like, everything is ideal about this second racket. Yeah. If I want to maximize internalization of success and externalize failure, which racket do I give you?
You're going to give me the good one.
I'm exactly right.
Yeah.
I'm going to give you this NASA racket. And then if I lose, why did I lose?
Blame it on the racket.
Oh, yeah, of course. Guy had this crappy racket, and you had this really good racket. It wasn't me, right?
Right.
I minimized that internalization. I maximized externalizing it to the racket, but also minimized the impact that would have on me and
right.
my view of self. I know I'm not bad. And again, optimists are really, really great at doing this. If I win, then guess what? I just whooped your butt.
With an old racket.
And you had this NASA racket. Yeah. And it didn't matter. I still beat you in it. That's how awesome I am. I can take this really, really poor, crappy racket and still beat you in tennis. Mm-hmm. So I would be maximizing. So I started thinking about self-handicapping with New Year's resolutions. Like if it's so big, or it's something that's so out of reach or so uncommon, then it probably helps me attribute failure at reaching that to other things. Now, this isn't something we're all thinking through, you know what I mean? That we're thinking, okay, how do I self-handicap this?
Yeah.
Just like students, we just had finals. Mm-hmm. So a lot of them were self-handicapping, they didn't even know it. They were going out the night before, an exam, staying up late. If they did bad on the exam, why was it? Oh, I stayed late, you know, this, I didn't have time, all these other things. And so they're able to kind of save face, so to speak, and inhibit that view of that negative view of self. And so part of me is thinking, as we examine these resolutions, that people make commitment to change, but they might be making large ones to protect their view of self.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's true, but I think it's something to think about, especially for everybody who's listening, who is going to be setting, what would be an advantage of setting a big one? Like, why is that advantageous? Well, there's meaning. Well, what I'm going to do now is kind of talk through how we can keep meaning, which is probably why we're choosing big ones,
mm-hmm.
with smaller resolutions. Does that make sense? Or maybe not as large. And some people talk about it as breaking down goals and maybe not focusing on the big one now. And there's definitely truth to that. But I want to come at it from a little different angle. And let's use the weight loss example again. So we know that, as we said earlier, people value the outcomes. And so the goals that we set around these type of outcomes, we can conceptualize those as B goals, B-E. I want to be healthy. I want to be a certain weight. I want to be this or that. Okay, so those, I tend to draw these in gears in my classes. And so this is like a big gear. It moves very slowly. To reach this goal is going to take some time, and then click, it's finally going to, I'm going to lose a pound, 2 pounds, 5 pounds, whatever it is. So that's the B goal. Now, that's the big goal, and nobody can see what I'm doing here. I'm visualizing this humongous gear. So then there's a smaller gear connected to that, and we call that the do goal. All right, so I need to be a particular weight or be healthy, so I need to do exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I need to do healthy eating. I need to do whatever. But that's still pretty big gear, because doing exercise is complicated. Doing healthy eating is complicated. There's a lot of things involved with that. That's where most people stop when they set goals just day to day or with these New Year's resolutions. They say, okay, I want to be a certain weight, so I need to do physical
this.
Activity mm-hmm. and do healthy eating, and they stop. So we have two gears connected. If that do goal ever stops, so I'm not doing exercise anymore, then guess what happens to the big B goal? You're not moving.
It doesn't move. Yeah.
It doesn't move.
Yeah.
So if you think of the second gear, the do goal, as one that's spinning, it's still not spinning fast, right? To say that you are being physically active, doing physical activity, that's still a little slow moving,
mm-hmm.
but definitely faster than when the weight clicks off the scale. There's a third gear that we commonly lose with these resolutions that arguably, I would argue, is by far the most important. So it's not that having, you got to have the be goal.
Right.
There's no point if you don't, right?
Right.
You got to have the do goals because there'd be no point as well. But there's a third smaller gear that connects to the do goal, and it's called the action goal. So let's say, let's do something really, really simple. Let's say my B goal is to be healthy, and for whatever reason, I think I need to take a multivitamin. So that would be my do goal. I need to take them all. But what are all the small behaviors? What are all those small behaviors that I would need to do to be doing my taking my vitamin? Well, I'd have to buy it. I'd have to remember to take it.
Yeah.
Unscrew the cap, pull that little cotton whatever out of it, right? Get a glass of water, put it in my mouth, drink the water. You know, I got it. It sounds very simple, but those are all the actions or motor goals, things that I have to do.
Yeah.
So now think of lose weight, be a particular weight, do more exercise. Well, what are some of the action goals?
Well, you got to get up and do it. I mean, you've got to get off the
couch. I got to set the alarm.
Set the alarm to get up.
Yeah.
I got to, if I'm going to a gym, drive to a gym.
Yeah, if I don't have a gym membership, I got to buy one.
Right. Or, I mean, just step, put on my shoes. I mean, get dressed, all that stuff.
I know. And not only put them on, but I got to tie them. Right. And I got to find an outfit. I got to make sure the outfit matches if I'm going in public.
Got to have music.
Got to have music and this playlist. Now I got to upload music here. I got to figure out where the kids are going to go. I got to pack my bag, put it in the car so I remember. I got all these little action goals that if those stop, our do gear stops.
Mm-hmm.
If the do gear stops, then the B-goal gear stops. And so a lot of times when people set a big outcome for their New Year's resolution and they figure out generally what they need to do, they could even work out a specific plan. Like on this day, I'm going to do this workout. On this day, I'm going to do this one. And that's all great. Again, you have to have those. But the encouragement in this scenario of setting big, this myth that I have to set big, you don't have to. People could say, I'm going to eat an apple on January 2nd, and that's my New Year's resolution, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if they do want to go big, then you have to move from not only the be goal to do goal to these little small action. The problem is how meaningful is putting on my shoes compared to being active and making it feels good. You go to the gym, you made it, you get done. It's like, wow, that reinforces. Then when you see the weight click off that scale, man, that's because those are meaningful. I'm not saying we can put meaning, but there's a third term that I'd like to kind of wrap up with, and it's called transcendence. And it's this idea that we can override sort of our moment and the difficulties and see past to those do goals and be goals. So when I'm putting on my shoes, I can add meaning to that because if I don't do this, I'm not active. If I'm not active, I'm not reaching my bigger resolution. So the idea that even difficult situations, we said earlier about how much do you value passing fast food when you want it or when it would be easy, right? Flying around the softball, this or that, and I just got to swing through somewhere. So I was talking to a lady just a few weeks ago, and we were talking about this exact thing with kids and just being on the go. And I got to drop one kid off here, one here. And her goal was to eat healthy. And that was valuable to her. But I started asking her, why is it valuable? Why is it valuable to you? So you got this big goal, eating healthy. But why? Well, we started thinking, it was like, well, I want to be an example for my kids. That was her why. And that was the value, that the meaning that was driving that do goal, so to speak. But really, you could argue that's the B goal too, right? That's who I want to be as a role model
for my kids.
For the kids. So how can she transcend that moment? And that's another point off to the side, real quick. Is we get really good at setting these outcome goals like weights or be a certain weight or be healthy or whatever. But it's probably good to think about why in the world you would even want to be a particular weight. Why in the world you would want to be healthy? There's something driving that. Is it somebody else driving it? The more internal it is, clearly the more meaningful it is. So she could be driving around, and what we talked about was when she has the urge and the busyness and the stress, the anxiety that goes along with that to swing through, she can transcend that moment and think about, my kids are in the back. If I drive through, this is not the example I want to set. now that makes it makes that overriding that desire to stop meaningful because she transcended that moment. And so hopefully, even if New Year's resolutions are big, which I guess is, what do you think? Is it a myth? Here we are talking. Do you think it's a myth, Tim? Or that people do set these big ones?
No, I don't think it's a myth.
Yeah, I think they do.
Yeah.
Whether they're successful or not, that's up to pretty much what we're talking about.
Right.
What are your abilities to add meaning and commitment to that, to believe in yourself? There's a saying, if I believe I can, I might. If I believe I can't, I probably won't. And so it's not only the commitment to change, it's the belief in that. It's finding things with meaning and value and making sure you locate those. It's not setting yourself up to self-handicap, mm-hmm. but always knowing that your failures with mindfulness and other areas of study, we tell people that you're not your emotions. You're not your failures. Yeah, you might be angry or frustrated or feel like that, but that's just a feeling. That's not who you are. Mm-hmm. And when we have identities that are rooted in other things, we can overcome that. But it's not only about setting these big resolutions. It's about making sure we find value in the small things that can build up. So maybe we need to go small or go home. Maybe that's the...
change the saying.
Maybe we can change the saying.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, do you got any other thoughts about that?
No, I don't. It was a great conversation. I mean, it's something we all deal with, I think,
yeah.
because we all tend to set that resolution and we don't always accomplish it. Mm-hmm. And so it's one of those things where, like I said, I set them all the time. I try to make it. I make it at a certain point and I usually don't get the rest mm-hmm. of the year. But yeah, I will. There is one thing that I have accomplished, and it was drinking sodas.
Oh, yeah.
I used to drink. I was one of those. I'd go to work. I'd get a 32 ounce on the way to work. Mm-hmm. I'd drink it. I'd get another one on the way home, constantly drinking it. And one day my daughter said to me, "Hey, I bet you can't stop drinking soda."
Uh-oh.
And I said, "Let's do it together." And we did. And I'll be honest, out of it, my wife, my daughter, and I, all three of us did it. I'm the only one who's still going. I made it the longest. And it's been, I guess, almost 4 years. Now, I will say I do drink caffeine. I drink coffee. I drink iced tea. But I gave up sodas completely.
Well, yeah, well, your goal wasn't to give up caffeine.
No, it was to give up sodas, and I did.
So why do you think it worked?
To be honest with you, it was kind of like that lady saying, "I want to set the example for my kid."
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, since my daughter challenged me, I said, "Okay, I'm going to set that example for her."
Mm-hmm.
And that I think that had a lot to do with it. And then I just kind of lost the taste for them, you know?
I know. And that, yeah, and then you start getting the immediate... And do you notice, like, when you drink it again, it's like, oh my gosh, this is so sweet. Like, how did I drink?
I will say, about a month ago, I accidentally picked up my daughter, mm-hmm. Her cup, and I took a sip. It was the worst thing ever.
I know. I've noticed that, too, as over the years when I got less sugar, like in my coffee, when I quit putting, mm-hmm. and now I have coffee with sugar in it. It's just like.
Yeah, it's too sweet.
But then you start getting those little small immediate responses, but it took that meaningful big goal, right? That do goal to get
right.
you where you needed to be.
Yeah.
So maybe we could encourage listeners and even in ourselves, when we set these, is to think about that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I going to set this resolution to drink less soda? Why is that meaningful to me? What am I trying to accomplish beyond the number of soda or the weight on the scale? And even, is that even relevant to what I'm going after? Some people will choose weight as an outcome because they want to be healthy. Well, weight, as we talked before on some of these podcasts,
right.
weight may be irrelevant to the goal that you have. But we're just thinking, I need to do what? I need to measure weight. I need to do.
Yeah.
Maybe not. As soon as you start measuring something that's not relevant to really why, then it becomes troublesome. Well, hopefully, Tim, the listeners have something to take home with them.
I think they do.
For this upcoming New Year's resolution. And I hope everyone comes back to the next, as we turn on the next myth in our podcast of Health Hullabaloo, trying to get some clarity in all the confusion of all the health and fitness myths. Thank you, Tim. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, as always, Dr. Ferris.
Thank you for joining us on Texas A&M Health Talk, a production of the Texas A&M University Health Science Center. Visit us on the web at vitalrecord.tamhsc.edu, where you'll find answers to all of your health questions. Until next time, stay healthy.